I wonder, have you seen the X-Files movie? Maybe you haven't. It wasn't a great success, apparently. And actually, if you have seen it, you'll know it's incredibly gross in terms of the plot, which I'm not going to repeat to you now. Almost worse than Tombs, if you remember Tombs from the previous television series. If you want to find out more, you'll have to go and see the movie itself. But the movie has a perceptive subtitle, which it explores. The movie's called The X-Files, I Want to Believe. I Want to Believe. It underlines something about the generation in which we live. We live in a generation which is open to belief. Belief in almost anything. But sometimes unable to arrive at belief in something. So I thought we might look at that theme for the next month in our morning worship. Just that theme, I want to believe, and explore some of the issues around that theme. And to open our study by looking at those who want to believe but struggle. And to look at that through the lens of the healing of the demon-possessed boy that we read about earlier in the service. I want to believe, but I struggle. In that story that we read earlier in church, you discover that unbelief results from two opposite things. An inability to believe results from two opposite things. It can be either one of two things. On the one hand, it can be because we underestimate God's ability, or on the other hand, because we overestimate our ability. And I want to think about that in the light of the story that we read earlier in the service. People who are struggling to come to belief, who find it difficult, often are in that position because they underestimate God's ability. I want you to imagine the scene of the story that we read. It comes to us in vivid language. It's amongst one of the most vivid stories in the Gospel according to Mark. And the reason why the language is so vivid is because this story is the story of an eyewitness. The eyewitness was probably the Apostle Peter. We think that he was the person behind much of what we learn from Mark's Gospel. Mark's Gospel was the first Gospel to be written. Matthew and Luke are based upon it. John took a slightly different approach. And Peter was probably the key person behind Mark's understanding of Jesus. And what we have in these verses, the vividness of the language and the way in which the story is told, suggests that this is how Peter saw it happen. Jesus and three of his disciples, his closest friends, James and John and Peter, have just been up a mountain where you will recall Jesus was transfigured before them. His glory was revealed in an amazing way. And they met some of the great heroes of the Jewish faith from the past. And the disciples were so overcome with what happened there that they didn't want to come down. They wanted to stay. But Jesus said, no, we've got to go back. And when they came down the mountain from this amazing experience, they come down to a commotion. A commotion which was going on and which involved a direct challenge to the credibility of Jesus' message. The timing of this is amazing. If you're a believer, if you're a Christian leader, you will have experienced this yourself. You will have been at a mountaintop in your Christian experience. Something amazing will have happened in your life. God will have revealed himself to you. He will have used you in some amazing way. And almost immediately afterwards, there comes a challenge to your faith and to the credibility of your message and your life. And that's what happened to Jesus and these disciples. They come down from the mountain to a commotion. Jesus asks what the argument is about. And when he asks what the argument is about, not his disciples, but a man in the crowd speaks up and answers. He said, I brought my son to you. My son is in a bad way. He is demon-possessed, and at times the demon causes things to happen in his life that actually threaten his health and security. And he said, I brought him to you. You weren't here. And your disciples took him, and he said, in spite of what they did, they couldn't heal him. Jesus asks for the boy to be brought to him. As soon as Jesus asks for this and they go to get the boy is immediately convulsed by the demon. And everything that the Father had described in verse 18 of the passage that we read earlier in the service, whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground, he foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and become rigid. All those things that the Father had described in verse 18 now happened to the boy. It threw the boy into a convulsion, he fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus looks at this and he says, like a medical doctor might say in our own culture, he said, how long has he been like this? And the Father says, from childhood. In fact, he said, what you see now is not the worst. There have been times, he said, when it has thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. And this is a serious, difficult situation for this father and for his boy and for the whole family that they represent. And then, and here's one of those touches of the eyewitness account. It would only have come from somebody who was there and saw this happen, okay? The father turns to Jesus and he says this, but if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. It's a powerful emotional expression of the father's attachment to the boy. The fact that what had happened in this boy's life didn't just impact on him, but it impacted on his whole family. Who knows what this family had been through? Who knows to how many people they had not already been with the boy? And the boy was no better. In what he says, it seems as if he almost doesn't believe or is almost challenging Jesus, you know? He says, if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. That response to Jesus arises probably out of the fact that he had been to lots of others. You know, if you can do anything, the emphasis might lie there. But also probably the emphasis lies not on the father's doubt that Jesus could do anything, but looking at the situation of his boy, underlining the impossibility of anyone doing anything. This was not something that the medical science of this man's day could fix. There were no drug therapies. There was no way to control this. This was a situation which, humanly speaking, was impossible. That's what the dad was underlining. This is an impossible situation, and I'm handing it over to you. But Jesus challenges his remark, not to berate his lack of faith, but to underline the God with whom faith puts you in touch. In response to what the man says, Jesus says to him, if you can. Everything is possible for him who believes. And sometimes the way we understand that text, it seems like as if Jesus is blaming him for not having faith. You know, the reason your boy's not healed is you have no faith. But that's not what Jesus is saying. What Jesus is saying to the distraught father is, a man who has faith will not set any limit to what I can do. Jesus' response was not about the man's lack of faith. It was telling him that when someone puts their faith in God, they tap into an illimitable source. Something was going on in Jesus' life that was way beyond anything this man had ever experienced before. And the desperate father, in response to what Jesus said, cries out. Again, it's a strong word. It's an eyewitness word. He cries out. He shouts out. Some of the later manuscripts add another couple of words in here. They say with tears. They're probably not in the original, but you can see the thrust of that. This man was completely overwhelmed, and he cries out, and he says to Jesus, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. And with a simple word of command, no hocus pocus, no jiggery pokery, no footering about and doing various kinds of formal activities of various sorts, Jesus just simply gives a word of command. He addresses the demon and he commands it to go. And it does. It just goes. Sometimes we're inclined to think that in this story, we're looking at epilepsy. We're not. We're looking at demon possession. New Testament could distinguish between those two things. These may have been more primitive peoples than us, but they weren't stupid. And in one of the previous chapters in Mark's Gospel, you can see how actually the two different kinds of condition are separated and dealt with by totally different New Testament words. The New Testament understood what Jesus confronted here. It was not epilepsy. It was demon possession. And Jesus, with a word of command, tells the demon to go, and the demon goes. And the boy is well. The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said he's dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. This man was faced with one of life's impossibilities. And Jesus dealt with that impossibility. See, the big problem about faith often is the fact that we underestimate God's ability. We underestimate God's ability. We think that he is bounded by the things that you and I are bounded by the laws and rules that constitute the natural life of the universe where we live, and that he cannot in some way override those things, that he cannot in some way himself, by being present in them, change them. If you thought about it for a moment, if this man thought about it for a moment, he was standing before a greater miracle than the miracle of his boy's healing. Because he was standing before the presence of the eternal God dwelling in the life of Jesus, the carpenter from Nazareth. Here was the greatest miracle the world has ever seen, that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Surely, if God could send his Son as a human being into the world, to do anything else is a simple equation for him. Maybe you are faced with one of life's great impossibilities. Maybe it vexes your spirit, worried past all telling about it. Jesus can do it. Whatever it is. That loose translation of his words, a man who has faith, a woman who has faith, will not set any limit to what I can do. Unbelief often lurks in a life where there is an underestimate of the ability of God. He is the eternal one. He is the all-powerful one. There isn't anything that he cannot do. But secondly, unbelief dwells where we overestimate our own ability. If Jesus criticizes anyone that day, it is not the father so distraught about his boy. It is the disciples who ought to have known better. When the boy's dad says to him, "I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not," Jesus responds, "O unbelieving generation, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you?" Who is Jesus talking about here? He's talking about the disciples. This was for them. Why? Should we be surprised that they failed? Well, no, who could blame them? After all, even the Father admitted that what he was asking was impossible. So who could blame the disciples for being unable to do the impossible? But they had not failed in the past. Just three chapters before this, Mark chapter 6, there is the story of Jesus sending the disciples out. And we read in verse 7, calling the 12 to him, he sent them out two by two and gave them authority over evil spirits. And then it says in verse 12, they went out and preached that people should repent. They drove out many demons and anointed many sick people with oil and healed them. This is just three chapters before this. The same group of people who had failed to cast the demon out of the little boy had actually cast out demons and healed people in response to Jesus' command as he sent them out. And so imagine them in this set of circumstances. This man comes with his son. Jesus isn't there. They don't know where he is. He's gone away with three of the others. And so when the man comes, they say, well, that's okay. We'll do it. And they take the boy and they command the demon to go, and nothing happens. Nothing happens. And they must have felt so bad about it. Here's a man who really is in need, and we ought to be able to help him. We helped other people. Why can we not help him? It's one of the big downers to our faith, isn't it? I remember Sunday morning here, one Sunday morning after church, our prayer ministry team were praying with someone. It was a particularly difficult situation. They called me in. And I remember praying with that person. And what we had to do was we had to get a quick response team to come. We had to get him home, and one of the elders got him home. We got a medical response team out to deal with him and so on, and he was looked after. And in one sense, you could say, well, we did all that we could be reasonably expected to do. You know, we got the medical people in. We got him home to where he was safe. We did everything we could do. And yet I went home that day so gutted. So gutted that here was a guy in our midst with needs, and we couldn't meet those needs. We couldn't do what he needed us to do. And that must have been how the disciples felt that day. They had prayed for this boy. They had commanded the demon to go, and the demon hadn't gone. Why did they feel? Why did I feel? Well, the popular view in Jesus' day was that you could only overcome demons by either or both, using the right formula, and there were kind of ways that were set out whereby people went about exorcisms, if you want to call them that, and also in terms of strength. You know, the only way you could cast a demon out is if you were stronger than the demon. So if you were stronger than the demon, you could command the demon to go, and the demon would go. In verse 18, that comes out actually in the original. It says, when the man talks about the disciples, he says, I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. The word that is used there, translated they could not, is a word that indicates they did not have the strength to do it. That's what the man understood the process to be. He said, I don't know who these people are, but they're not up to that much, because they couldn't do it. They didn't have the strength. But later on, when they ask Jesus about it, in verse 28, and they say, why couldn't we do it? They get a really unusual reply. He replied, this kind can come out only by prayer. What did he mean? Did he mean the disciples never prayed? Well, Jesus had taught them to pray. Remember, they asked, teach us to pray, and he gave them that prayer that we used in church just a few minutes ago. That they had been devout Jews all their lives. They prayed all their lives. What did Jesus mean? It only comes out by prayer. The point was that for the disciples on that occasion, having done it before, they thought they could do it again. And Jesus sees this kind of behavior as unbelief. Isn't that what he said? Oh, unbelieving generation, how long shall I put up with you? How long shall I stay with you? How can that be unbelief? It was unbelief because they were not wholly trusting on God to do what only God can do. That's why Jesus mentions prayer. What is prayer? Prayer is the human expression of our absolute dependence upon and trust in the living God to do for us what we need. Otherwise, what point is there in prayer? One of the commentators on this passage says this: they, that is the disciples, had to learn that God's power is not given to people in that way. God doesn't give power, and you have it and you possess it for all the rest of your life. And if you can do something in his name once, you can do it 1,000 times. God's power is not given to people in that way. It has rather ever to be asked for afresh and received afresh. And that's what was wrong here. That's what was wrong. It wasn't that they were weak. Of course they were weak. They were ordinary people like you and I. They were just as weak in Mark chapter 6 when Jesus sent them out and the demons heard their command and fled and the sick were healed. They were the same weak people then that they were when this dad came with his boy to Jesus. What was different was they went out that first time from Jesus' presence, quaking in their shoes, thinking, how are we going to do this? And they knew that they couldn't do it. They would have to depend on the power and command of Jesus to make the demons flee and to change the situation that they would face. And they were dependent utterly on him because they'd never done this stuff in all their lives before. These scribes and Pharisees, for example, who were arguing with them at the start of the passage, doesn't tell us what they said, but you can guess what they said. They were mocking them. They were saying, oh, you claim to do all these things. You can't do them. Scribes never claimed to be able to heal or cast out demons. They just concentrated on the word of God. And you could hear them. Maybe a few people paid a bit more attention to the scriptures. You know, read a bit more and understood a bit more, unlearned and ignorant as you are, you wouldn't be going about making fools of yourselves like this. You could just hear the conversation. That didn't happen the first time, because the first time they went out, they had all that stuff already at the back of their heads. Who are we to do this? And so they leaned heavily on Jesus. They trusted him that when he commanded them to go and to command the demons, that it would actually happen. But this time they thought, we've done this before. We can do this again. And it didn't work. We overestimate our own ability, and that is a form of unbelief. It takes us to a point where we think that in Christian ministry, in Christian outreach, in Christian leadership, we can do this thing. And we can't. We can only do it through absolute dependence upon God. They poke fun at me a bit in the Alpha course that we do in churches, you know, and our next one's about to start, and I hope you're encouraging friends and people to come. The kind of team poke fun at me because they say I change it every time. They say, you know, you get different illustrations and you say different things. And I keep telling them I don't change it, but I do change bits of it here and there. And yet it's the same course. Why do I do that? Because I never, ever assume that because on the last course, all these people came to faith. All these people heard the voice of God and their lives were changed. I never, ever assume that just by doing the same thing again, it will happen all over again. We need to learn never to overestimate our own ability. To understand that as soon as we start to do stuff that we think we can do in Jesus' name, that's an expression of unbelief. And it will fail. I want to believe. I want to believe that God can change my life. I want to believe that God can use me to be a witness for him. I want to believe that God can turn the world around. I want to believe that God can deal with the situation in my life. That only happens when we get a true estimate of the ability of God and the ability of ourselves.